Mr. President, Mr. Director General, ladies and gentlemen, I understand that in the proceedings of this afternoon, I am sandwiched between Mr. Acheson and elections. A very uneasy place to be, and I don't propose to stay in that place very long. But I do feel very greatly privileged and very deeply moved at the opportunity that you have given me to appear once again before at an FAO meeting and to greet you in your magnificent new quarters, which have been described so felicitously by Mr. Acheson. It seems a very great change indeed from the somewhat nondescript surroundings in which we began the work of FAO. And I'm sure that all of you and all of us who are interested in this work, who are not now participating in it actively and directly, must be very grateful indeed to the Italian government for what they have done to make this new home possible. For me, this is a sentimental pilgrimage. And it is impossible on an occasion like this not to reminisce a bit. I hope I am not being unduly egotistical when I say that I consider myself one of the group of founding fathers of FAO. And there is no international work in which I have ever participated which has given me greater pleasure and greater satisfaction than to have been included in that group which started the work of FAO what seemed now so many years ago. I recall, like Mr. Acheson, the conference at Hot Springs. I also recall a meeting in Washington after that conference at which Mr. Acheson presided, and at the end of which I found myself chairman of an interim committee. I must say that up to that time I had been engaged in various kinds of international activity and obscure positions, but I had never considered myself as knowledgeable in any way at all in matters of food and agriculture. But I began to learn something about international organization in the work of the interim committee. We worked hard and we worked long. I remember especially the struggles we had over the Constitution. And I'm very happy to learn that we must have struggled with at least a measure of success, because the Constitution in the last years has stood the test pretty well. There was at one stage in our work when we were a little pessimistic about the eventual result, and we were getting a little confused about the direction in which we were going, so we took ourselves to Princeton for a week's seclusion in that seat of academic calm, where, among other things, there is the Institute of Higher Intellectual Studies. Well, we engaged in a week of higher intellectual studies. At the end of the week, we came up with the Constitution. And then there were the difficulties of the early days of staffing, finding people who would interest themselves in the work of FAO. And so my mind goes back to those friends and colleagues of mine who had so much to do with laying the foundation of this organization, which has now become the great flourishing structure of today. And I think of Dr. Hyderi in Iraq, and Dr. Chowd, Mr. Tolley, your Director General, your Deputy Director General, Mr. Appleby, Mr. McDougall, and our own Dr. Barton, who, if I may say so without being accused of excessive national pride, is a good Canadian contribution to FAO. And then there was our first conference at Quebec. where we chose the first director general. And at that time, as Mr. Acheson has pointed out, we thought that we were achieving the objective in our work of universality, that we were building up an international organization in which every country and every type of government could play its part irrespective of its political views, its political loyalty, or its political prejudices. We have seen that dream of universality, even in a technical organization such as this, disappear. And in spite of that handicap, and it is a handicap, and it's one that we must hope can still be overcome, in spite of that handicap, FAO has gone on from achievement to achievement. Achievement often without the spectacular, which is a contrast to some of the international work of recent years, where we have the spectacular without the achievement. And now, Mr. President, the period of development, the period of experiment, the period, I suppose, of instability of income is nearly over, and you can plan ahead with a better sense of certainty of what is required and certainty of what you can do. It's not, wouldn't be appropriate for me to emphasize the importance of your work because you know that better than I do. It's also, of course, of great importance, and you know this as well as I do, to associate that work with the other agencies of the United Nations. And I'm glad to know that that kind of cooperation and association is going on through ECOSOC. I hope that in your technical assistance work, which Mr. Acheson has so well described as of cardinal importance, it will be possible to cooperate with other agencies which are engaged in this field, both inside the United Nations and outside the United Nations. I remember that when I was directly concerned with FAO, I used to make speeches on our work, on our ambitions, on our objectives, and I talked very often in those days about the importance of the welfare approach to human happiness and human progress. And it was that approach that we were making in FAO. Well, that approach is just as important now as it was 5 or 6 years ago. And yet, it has been borne in on me during those 5 or 6 years that we will never be able to make that approach successfully through welfare if we cannot at the same time establish conditions of peace and security and stability. Welfare and warfare are incompatible, and the latter will certainly destroy the former if we allow it to. In the early days of my country's history, in the early pioneer days, the settlers used to leave the enclosure and go into the fields to work the land with a musket on their shoulder. If they went without the musket, they were likely to become victims to the savages prowling in the forest. If they spent all their time using the muskets against those savages, it was certain that the settlement would starve to death. And so they had to do both. They had to carry the musket and carry the farm implement. And I'm afraid that we have to do that today in the tragic circumstances of our time. I hope that that time will come through our efforts in the United Nations and our efforts elsewhere, that we will be able to throw away the musket and concentrate on the plow. But that time has certainly not come yet. In a conference which I have just been attending, we've been talking a great deal about filling the gap. Well, there's another gap to be filled. It's the gap between the developed and the underdeveloped countries. And that gap can be filled with food. And that is your job in FAO. And in that job, I wish you well, and I wish you all success in your new home. Thank you very much.